With great power comes great responsibility.
Compromise where you can. Where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right, even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no, you move.
Never step onto the battlefield of ideas unprepared. Before you enter the fray, you need a plan. And there's no better place to get one than right here on Tactics with host Caleb Colquitt. The Situation Room goes live now on News Radio 1440.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Wednesday to all of you, and welcome into Tactics. We appreciate you joining us on Facebook, either on the Tactics Facebook page or on the News Radio 1440 page, whether you're on Twitter, Twitch, Periscope, YouTube, any of the mediums. We appreciate you choosing to be with us today. Got a lot going on here in the state of Alabama. It's weird, though, because this is sort of an odd hodgepodge between national news and state news, and as anybody in the news game will tell you, especially somebody that covers local news, sometimes they mesh together, and this is a case of it. Actually, a lot of news regarding the state of Alabama coming from none other than Cocaine Mitch. That's right, the senator from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell, typically doesn't make it into our statewide news, but today there's actually a couple of different stories that directly involve the state of Alabama. So Cocaine Mitch, apparently part of our state and our state's history. Not sure that we want to claim that, but good old Cocaine Mitch. So Mitch McConnell, first of all, this story is essentially McConnell walking into a rake. And I say this, and I'm even actually going to give Mitch McConnell a compliment here, because even though I don't like the guy much personally, I do believe in giving credit where credit is due. Because even though I think Mitch McConnell is a horrible majority leader, the guy votes liberal a lot, typically votes for a big government. He's more of a crony capitalist establishment rhino Republican, far more so than he ever thought about being a conservative. This is a guy who has no problem with tons and tons of government spending, has been more than happy to rack up our country's debt. There's a lot to not like about the guy, especially if you're a conservative. But I will say that the guy is masterful at the game of politics. Anybody that can run as a Republican with his record on things like taxation and spending and remain in the Senate as long as he has to be pretty good at politics. I don't like the guy much. I disagree with him a lot. But when push comes to shove and you have to look at this objectively, the man's a very good politician. Anybody that can snow the state of Kentucky into reelecting him as often as he has to be pretty good at the game of politics. However, it's important to note here that he is out of his element. People in Kentucky are not like people in Alabama. Now, granted, there's more similarities between Kentucky and Alabama than, say, you know, Alabama and Alaska or Alabama and Delaware, but they're still very different animals. Kentucky is riding that Mason-Dixon line to where half of the state is very much like Tennessee. And the other half of the state, the northern part, Lexington, Louisville, some of those cities, they're a lot more like the breadbasket. They're a lot more similar to Indiana, Illinois, Ohio. The culture there is a lot more like that. And so I'm sure that there are a lot of nuances to Kentucky politics that Mitch McConnell would be able to inform me about. And I'm sure that he has forgotten more about Kentucky politics than I'll ever know. Because like I said, as much as I dislike the guy, even though I think he's a horrible majority leader and horrible for the conservative movement, the man is a very talented politician. But he is completely out of his element commenting on Alabama politics. And it's not even so much what he says, even though I think what he's saying is actually probably wrong. It's more the fact that he said it at all that proves that he knows absolutely nothing about politics in the state of Alabama. And I think that being a radio guy gives me some special insight into this. Now, granted, I've not moved markets much, and the markets that I've moved to, because they've all been inside the state of Alabama, haven't been radically different. But here's the thing that you always need to be aware of. And this is true even if you're moving from Auburn to Montgomery, which is the only market move that I've ever made. You never assume that just because you're good at radio that you can do well in any market. That's not true. For example, one of the shows that appears on News Radio 1440, Rick and Bubba, those guys would not be popular in a lot of ways. They would not be popular if they tried to run a show in California or Washington, because their demeanor, their style does not fit that. I probably wouldn't be successful trying to run a local radio station or a local radio show in those markets. West Coast is very different than East Coast. North is very different than South. And each individual city has its own quirks, things that they like, things that they don't. Whenever you're moving from one market to another, even if you're not moving that far, even if the distance between the two cities you're moving to isn't necessarily long geographically, they can be worlds apart in terms of what they appreciate, what they don't appreciate. There's some cultural norms and some local customs that you may be unaware of, to where you can really step in it if you don't know what you're doing and you don't have a pretty watchful eye on the local customs and the general sentiment of the public in the market that you're in. And this is what's going on with Mitch McConnell. One of the biggest mistakes that a radio person can make when moving markets is that they assume, because they were good at their old market, the city that they used to broadcast in, that whatever worked there is going to work here. And I think that that's what Mitch McConnell is falling prey to, because he's weighing in again. Yeah, I know. He's weighing in again on Alabama's Senate race, and again with Roy Moore. I get that Mitch McConnell fancies himself kind of a kingmaker, but if anything, did he not learn his lesson last time? Remember that Mitch McConnell was the one that went out of his way to sabotage Mo Brooks and spent millions of dollars through his PACs to sabotage Mo Brooks and try to boost up Luther Strange, and we wound up getting Doug Jones in office. And I'm not saying Mitch McConnell is the only person responsible for that, but let's be honest, he had as much to do with it as just about any other politician. He was very influential in that primary, which led to Roy Moore being the candidate. And you would think that he would have learned his lesson from last time. Maybe I ought to stay out of this. I don't know Alabama politics all that well. But of course, Mitch McConnell, assuming that he's much more knowledgeable than he actually is, has decided, I'm going to go ahead and weigh in on this one again. Now, he's not jumped in with any money or tried to run any ads like he has last time, at least so far. Let's hope he doesn't get to that point. But anyway, that's what's going on right now with Mitch McConnell. And he said this earlier today. Quote, I think the people of Alabama have figured this guy out. I think they've seen quite enough of Roy Moore. Mitch, shut up. I don't want Roy Moore elected. I don't want him to win the primary. And if you want my rationale and reasoning for that, there are tons of videos on my website, on the Tactics YouTube channel. Go look them up if you want to go. I'm not going to go into that today because I've beat that dead horse probably more than I should have. And so if you're interested in that, go back to some of my other content. Not going to get into that today. But Senator McConnell, Cocaine Mitch, look, you're helping him. Shut up. If you want to get Roy Moore elected, if you want him to be the representative in this particular case, if you want him to win the Republican primary and go on to face Doug Jones, and he's the only Republican candidate that I'm convinced can actually lose to Doug Jones, you better believe Doug Jones is on his hands and knees praying to Molech or Baal or whatever he prays to every night, saying, please let Roy Moore be the guy I have to run against. if Mitch McConnell wants to help Roy Moore be in the primary spot, all you have to do is badmouth him. There is a rule that is consistent across Alabama politics. It's a weird rule, but I'm just going based off of experience here. People in Alabama detest being told what to do, especially by somebody who doesn't live in Alabama. It drives them nuts. History shows this. And in fact, the most recent example of that is Mitch McConnell telling people to vote for Luther Strange, supporting him. Luther Strange was already in a lot of trouble, and I'm not sure that he could have won regardless of what Mitch McConnell did because of his connection to the governor and the scandal, and if nothing else, the appearance of a scandal going on with that. But the thing that absolutely sealed the deal was Mitch McConnell backing him. People in Alabama do not like being told by outsiders how they are supposed to vote. And Mitch McConnell is highly, highly unpopular in this state. The best thing that could happen to Roy Moore's campaign is for Mitch McConnell to come out and talk about how much he does not want Roy Moore to be there. And as far as the, oh, people have seen enough of Roy Moore has been a staple in the state for a very, very long time. I mean, the guy is politically immortal. The fact that a few weeks ago he was leading in the polls is proof of that. Now, the recent polling has shown a very different trend. Roy Moore is no longer in the lead, something I'm very grateful for. And by the way, even though I've said this 100 times on the show, nobody should misconstrue this into me hating Roy Moore. I don't. But I think that he is the only person that even has a chance of losing this seat. And as such, he is not the person that we need in the primary slot. He's not the Republican that we need to go up against Doug Jones. But even if you take that aside, you have to admit that Roy Moore is politically immortal, and somehow he continues to win races no matter the political baggage that happens. He continues to at least win primaries in the most recent example. And so I don't think that this is necessarily going to help Roy Moore, but if anything could propel Roy Moore to the top to actually win this primary, it would be Mitch McConnell and a bunch of other rhinos talking about how much they don't want Roy Moore. That may be the only thing that can push Roy Moore past the finish line. If Mitch McConnell does not want to deal with Roy Moore, the best thing that he can do is keep his mouth shut and do nothing. That would be the thing that is most likely going to wind up in the Moore campaign not being able to shake this out, not being able to actually secure that Republican nomination. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. And I've been covering Alabama politics for a while now. And I'm telling you, one thing that remains consistent, the people of Alabama do not like being told how to vote. They just don't. Even by somebody that is popular and incredibly well-liked in this state, as Donald Trump, they don't necessarily like being told how to vote. Sometimes if it affirms what they were already going to do, they'll go along with it. But the worst thing that you can do in this state is to tell people who you're not supposed to vote for. And Mitch McConnell is playing right into that hand. He is walking into a rake at this point. But it's not all bad, because I do have to give Mitch McConnell credit. There was a moment yesterday in the news cycle where Mitch McConnell really got a chance to shine. And so this is another tie-in to the state of Alabama, oddly enough. So twice he's been in the Alabama news cycle. It turns out that Senator McConnell, in his past, in his ancestry, he is a descendant of people from Alabama who were slave owners. So back when slavery was a thing in Alabama, some of Mitch McConnell's ancestors owned slaves, and they were able to prove this the other day. So this became a thing. They had a story written about it, and they actually asked Mitch McConnell about this in the press the other day. And so here's how that went.
Were you aware that your great-great-grandfathers were slave owners in Alabama before the Civil War? And has that revelation caused you to change your position on reparations?
You know, I find myself once again in the same position as President Obama. We both oppose reparations, and we both are the descendants of slaveholders.
Okay, before I come back on screen, I know I'm just leaving you with a freeze frame of Mitch McConnell, but I have to point this out. You gotta love Mitch McConnell's reaction to this. Look at that grin that he's got going on right there. Look at that. The thing is, Mitch McConnell, he's got that little grin on him. Mitch McConnell is so stoic and stone-faced most of the time. And I mean, most of the time, McConnell is just kind of a block of wood. But occasionally, he's got a joke, and when he pulls off a joke, and you know that he's practiced that he knew that somebody was going to ask him about that at some point during the day, and so he had prepared an answer for it. The thing is, I love that Mitch McConnell has the world's worst poker face when it comes to that, because when it comes to McConnell, he's kind of like that kid in seventh grade that he either planted a whoopee cushion in a teacher's chair or had planted a cherry bomb somewhere. And he was that kid that got everybody else in trouble because he couldn't keep a straight face when his joke was about to hit. So like, he would be the kid that the teacher's about to sit down and he's about to ruin it because he can't quit smirking. He's just got the world's worst poker face. So he knows that the joke is coming. He knows that he's about to nail it. And that was a perfect response to that question. It really was about the slave reparations, bringing in President Obama, who also had slaveholders in his ancestry, which is true of a lot of Americans. But just... you can tell that he knows the joke is coming, and so he's just like, kind of... He can't hold a straight face. He can't do it. And so it's hilarious. Mitch McConnell does this all the time if he's ever going to put forward a joke. And the guy's no comedian. And he's not exactly known for his wit or his zingers or anything. So when on the one rare occasion that he actually has one, Mitch McConnell, old cocaine Mitch, just doing a line of cocaine and then going out in front of the cameras for that. But yeah, this really was the perfect response to it. And what it really highlights, because the question itself is absurd, and so it deserves an absurd answer, which is, why would the fact that you have ancestors that own slaves do absolutely anything to change your opinion on slavery reparations? It's an absurd premise, and it deserves an absurd response. Because... presumably, and I'm trying to play middle of the road here just for a moment, let's say that you are for slavery reparations. Presumably the reason for that is because you believe that slavery is wrong and it has somehow, even though it happened 150 years ago, negatively impacted people today in a way that cannot be overcome. And so you're redistributing wealth from the people that own slaves. Well, I mean, because it's the ancestors of people who own slaves, it's not actually the people that own slaves. You're taking money from the descendants of slave owners to give it to the descendants of people who were slaves, and somehow that's justice in their own twisted mind. But nonetheless, that's the premise that they're going to. Somehow you can be held accountable for the wrongdoing of your ancestors, and that's really what it goes back to. If you believe that the sins of your father are transferable, in other words, that you have to pay for the wrongs of people and generations that came before you, that ideology is the only thing that could really have this sort of transferable guilt ideology set to it. And because of that, that doesn't change whether or not your ancestors committed these acts or not. Whether you are someone that does or does not have slave owners in their ancestry makes no difference whatsoever into whether or not you believe that a person should be held accountable for crimes committed by his ancestors or not. And just on that note, it's important to realize that if you go back far enough, I'm sure that you could find at least one slave owner and probably people that were slaves in everybody's ancestry. I mean, whether you're a creationist, evolutionist, doesn't matter. You go back far enough, somebody's ancestors owned somebody else's ancestors at some point. But what this response does is, it not only points out the absurdity of the whole thing, it also points out that President Obama was against reparations, publicly spoke out against them. And I think that that does put on display, and it was wise for Mitch McConnell to bring that up, that it's incredibly stupid to see how far this Overton window has moved in such a short amount of time. Because we're going from one of the farthest left, most radical political figures, certainly presidents, but one of the most far left political figures in American history, saying, no, slave reparations are, no, we're not doing that. That's stupid. The idea that we would specifically, now Obama does believe in redistribution of wealth. He just believes it should be done on grounds other than that. Maybe he actually even ideologically believes in slavery reparations, but he at the very least believed that it was politically unpalatable enough to avoid in the public eye. Maybe that's the case. Maybe you could make that case. But either way, it shows how far as a country we have moved from one of the most radical far-left political figures in American history saying, no, we're not doing slavery reparations, I oppose them, to now a large plurality of the candidates running for the Democrat nomination saying that they support them. Because Obama was 2 years ago when he made these statements, I believe this was back in the midterms, if not mistaken, which is 6 years ago. We have moved a very far distance politically in just 6 years. And if you're on the right, if you're any kind of conservative, it is terrifying to see how far left the left has moved in a very short amount of time. Because if we continue at this pace, we'll be a full-on socialist country, or at the very least, the Democrat Party will be a full-on socialist party in a couple of years. And honestly, I do not think that that prediction is all that far-fetched, especially if they wind up either nominating a full-on socialist like Bernie Sanders as their candidate, or if Trump wins re-election and we have more years of Trump, because the longer Trump is in office, and I'm not saying that this is an excuse to not vote for Trump, I'm just saying the longer that Trump is in office, the more radical the left seems to become, and the faster that movement and momentum takes place. But nonetheless, it does really show the speed in which that has happened. But another thing, this comment brings up the utter absurdity of the argument of slavery reparations in the first place. It really does sort of highlight that. And the reason for that is, who pays reparations to who? I mean, if you're Barack Obama, who probably had ancestors at some point on both sides, does he take money out of his wallet, put it in his left hand, put it in his right hand, and he just paid slavery reparations? How does that work? You'll remember that just a couple of weeks ago, Kamala Harris, another senator, that it turns out that she has slaves in her past. Slave owners in her ancestry, in her family history. Does she need to pay reparations? And also, you have to consider that we've got people that were white that were slaves in this country. It was rare, but it happened. You can even find pictures. I think there was one that I saw just a couple weeks ago from Louisiana of a little white girl who was a slave in the state of Louisiana. And that was not long before the Civil War. And you also had black slave owners, like we just pointed out, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris. And so you wind up with this impossible to untangle web of how do we understand who pays who, and the idea that anybody should be paying any kind of legal fee for the crimes of their ancestors is absurd. But even if you accept the premise, there's no way practically to let it play out. We're so far removed from it now, and there's been so many people that married other people that just about anybody that you could find would either be connected to a slave owner or someone who was a slave. And what about people that migrated relatively recently that don't have slave holders or have any slaves in their ancestry at all? There are black people that moved here that their family were never enslaved in the United States. And you've also got white people that lived here that were immigrants after the Civil War that their family never owned slaves. And so you can't do it along racial lines because that defeats the spirit of the argument. And so how do you untangle that web, and how do you deal with people who had both slave holders in their ancestry and slaves in their ancestry? Like, I don't think Kamala Harris, that they were ever able to find out if she did have any slaves in her ancestry. I'm not sure. But the point of that is it creates this impossible tangle, this massive mess that you could never be able to sort of sort out how that should be done and how it should be done justly. And also, how far back does this go? If we have a citizen whose family immigrated from, let's say, Egypt, does he have to pay reparation to Jews? Now, you'd say, well, but that was so long ago. Well, yeah, but so was slavery in America. That was a really long time ago. So long ago that there is not a single person alive today that even knew an American slave. And so, yeah, we're further removed from slavery in Egypt, but the idea is the principle that the idea is predicated upon is absurd regardless. And so you're taking it to an extreme there, but why is that any different? Why does that make any more or less sense, something that happened 4,000 years ago versus something that happened 150 years ago? Whatever happened back then in Egypt, the people that are alive today are just as connected to that as they are to slavery in the United States. It makes absolutely no sense. Because really, when you boil it all down and get to the meat and potatoes of this issue, this is what it all comes down to. There was a time where the average person in this country's standard, and I think the average person in this country, that this is still their standard, it's just the people that are the most radical or the loudest, and they're getting the most press right now. But the standard used to be, you are responsible for your actions. That was it. You weren't responsible for your ancestors' actions, and your ancestors weren't responsible for your actions. If you're a grown man and your grown son commits a crime, they don't punish you. And if you're a grown man and you commit a crime, or your father commits a crime, they don't punish you for that either. That's the legal standard that we all used to believe in, and the legal standard that we thought ought to be the way that you were judged. You were judged based on what you do, not based on what your parents do, not based on what your ancestors do. But somewhere along the line, we decided that that was no longer acceptable, and I don't understand why. When it's all said and done, I don't really take pride for anything any of my ancestors did, nor do I bear any shame for their folly. Good example. I actually do know a little bit about my lineage. You know that my last name is Colquitt. I come from Colquitt County, Georgia. The reason that it's called Colquitt County is because my family owned a lot of that particular county. They were a very influential family down there. Somewhere along the line, my family lost its money. It used to have a lot of it, now it has virtually none. And that's okay. But looking back at it, there are people that were incredibly influential, wealthy, that owned a lot of property, owned a lot of land. Some of them were generals. I have knights in my lineage. It's cool, but it's not my accomplishment. It's not anything that I did. And just like anybody else, there are also people in my lineage that were horse thieves and irreparable people. There are people in my past that own slaves. I do not take any shame whatsoever in the folly of my family, nor do I take pride in their accomplishments because they're not me. And this idea that we ought to be judged based on our lineage is just stupid. And it's actually exactly counter of the message of you shouldn't be judged based on the color of your skin, or you shouldn't be judged based on these other factors surrounding you, because they don't make up your character. They don't make up the actions that you've done. Dr. Martin Luther King's standard was, don't judge people by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I'm fine being judged based on the content of my character. In fact, I do believe that people ought to be judged based on the content of their character, and that is specifically why I take great pains to protect my character. And that's why in this country, back then when that was the standard, that's the reason that people thought a lot more of their reputation and their character, because they thought that that's how people should be judged. Not by the color of their skin, not by all these surrounding, frankly, irrelevant details. In the same way that I wouldn't want to be judged if my father or mother were a serial killer, and, you know, people could think badly of me, but being able to actually take some kind of action against me, or that they could do something to me because of something one of my relatives did, that's absolutely absurd. And so this has really become the new standard, unfortunately. You should have no pride in your achievements because government did that. You remember Barack Obama saying, well, if you built something, if you are a successful business person and have a company, you didn't build that. Somebody else did that. The government did that. The collective did that. That if you've built anything, if you've accomplished something, that's not really you. And this is the new standard that we've come to. And also, you should have no shame for your folly. There should be no consequences to any of the stupid decisions that you've made. If you want to sit around in your underwear and eat Cheetos all day, even though you're perfectly capable of working, oh, well, doesn't matter. We'll take care of you. I've had conversations with people on the left where they said, well, yeah, there's some lazy people, but they shouldn't be held accountable for their laziness. Really? They shouldn't starve just because they're lazy. Yeah, actually they should. Because here's the thing, eventually they'll get hungry enough to not be lazy. But that aside, you see where all this is going. Used to, everybody's held accountable for their own actions. You get rewarded if you do what's right, you get punished if you do what's wrong, and you're just judged based on what you do. The left has completely flipped that on its head. Now what they're saying is, you don't take pride in any of your accomplishments because government did that. And if you screw up, that was society's fault. That's not you. That's why we're saying that people that are felons in prison, they ought to be voting, because it's not really their fault. That was society's fault. That if we have a whole bunch of people in jail, or we have a whole bunch of people being punished, well, or we have a whole bunch of people impoverished, that's not really their fault. That's society's fault. If we have a bunch of teenagers running around, killing each other, shooting up schools, well, that's not really their fault. That's society's fault. We should have taken the guns away from them. We should have done this. We should have done that. No, no. People make their own decisions. And you cannot get away from that. See, now, the only thing that you should be ashamed of, or the only thing that you're allowed to take pride in, are things that you didn't do. The only thing that you can be proud of is if you're gay. Or if you are the descendant of slaves, or the descendant of black people, or Asian people, or immigrants, or Mexicans, or Hispanics of other kind. That's the only thing you're allowed to actually take pride in. And the only thing that you're allowed to be ashamed for is if you come from the opposite side. That if you're one of what the woke people would call privileged, the only thing that you should be ashamed of is the fact that you're white. The only thing that you should be ashamed of is that you come from a rich family. You see, now we're flipping the whole thing on its head. You shouldn't be ashamed of or proud of anything that you personally did, but you should be ashamed of or proud of something that society did to you or from your upbringing. Those are things that you can be ashamed of or you can have pride in. We're living in an absolutely upside down world, and all of this is an outcropping of collectivist thinking that you're not an individual, you're not a person, you're not a free thinking adult. You are a cog in the machine. And that is the only way that you can land anywhere in the philosophical ballpark, anywhere near all of this nonsense. You see, I think that this is one of the main reasons that we are given the lineage of Jesus Christ in the Gospels. Now, there's other important reasons, especially in the Gospel of Matthew, which was primarily written to the Jews. They wanted to be sure that the prophecy was fulfilled and that Jesus was indeed the offspring of King David. And I understand that there are other implications in that as well. But I think a big part of it, and I think it's really interesting what the Bible does with some of the footnotes and some of the things that it brings up in that genealogy. If you've ever read through it in the first part of the Gospel of Matthew there, you'll notice that a lot of people in the Lord's lineage were not necessarily great people. You've got people like David, sure. You have people going all the way back to Adam. You have Abraham. You have Judah. But it's important to note that not everybody in Christ's lineage was necessarily a Bible hero. You've also got people like Rahab. You also have people like Bathsheba, who married David after he murdered her husband so that he could be with her. Now, David had several wives. God could have had Jesus come from the lineage of any of them. And yet, he chose Solomon, the son of Bathsheba. See, there's a powerful lesson in there. And this is a biblical principle going all the way back to the law of Moses, that the sins of the father shall not be visited upon the son, and the sins of the son shall not be visited upon the father. Correct moral teaching, and you don't need the Bible to get there, but the Bible certainly talks about it. Correct moral teaching and basic human logic and intelligence would tell you, you do not hold people accountable for things that their ancestors did. And that's where this whole thing goes completely wrong with the slavery reparations. It doesn't treat people like individuals. It treats them like a large collective. And when you treat people like a collective as opposed to an individual that is held responsible for their own actions, then it makes perfect sense in the mind of a collectivist to punish a group and reward a group and not treat them like individuals. That's really where this all comes to a head. But, you know, the long and short of it is Mitch McConnell did exactly what he should have done by telling a quick joke, pointing out the absurdity of the situation, and then moving directly on and giving it no more thought than that. Dismissing this and treating it like it's not even worthy of discussion was the best way to handle it in that situation. All right, so we don't have a ton of time, but I do think we have time for one more quick story because, you know, it's Wednesday night. I got Bible study coming up, and I do want to do my best to get there as soon as possible. I guess we have to talk about this. Honestly, I don't really want to, but I kind of feel obligated to because I've been avoiding it and avoiding it and avoiding it, and everybody keeps talking about it. They won't shut up about it. So, yeah, I'll pay some attention to this stupid women's soccer story. What's her name? Megan Rapinoe, whatever. Yeah, here's the thing. Everybody's so focused on her and that she hates Trump and she doesn't like the American flag and that she kneels during the anthem and all this other stuff, which we've already gone through on Kaepernick. Here's the real question. Why does America have a women's soccer team? Everyone's avoiding that question. They just kind of assume that it's something that should happen and then are talking about the story as though it bears some significance. That's my question. Why do we have a women's soccer team? We've got so many sports in America. Why is that a thing? That's what I don't get. My mind is just completely blown by the fact that nobody stops to ask that question. But nonetheless, look, and here's the thing, because I know that I'm going to be called a sexist for this, so I'm going to clear this up right now. I think women's soccer is boring as sin. I would rather watch paint dry than watch women's soccer. And I've been to a women's soccer match. Back when I was at Auburn, we had to go to a certain amount of events, and sometimes we would go to some of the Auburn women's soccer. And yeah, I sat there, I cheered for them because they're girls from Auburn, but I could not care less. And out of all the sporting events, I went to Auburn, and I went to some of the really obscure ones to get spirit points. I was from a small fraternity. People have to be a lot more diligent in pulling their own weight in a small fraternity. But I got to tell you, when it came to that, when it came to women's soccer, if I hadn't been basically told by my fraternity brothers that I was going to go or face penalties from the fraternity, believe me, I would not have been there. So people were literally threatening me with fines, and that's the only way they got me to go to a women's soccer match. But here's the thing. I know that I'm going to be called a sexist for this at some point in the comment section, but I think men's soccer is boring as sin, too. It has nothing to do with the sex of the people on the field. It has everything to do with the sport being horrible, horribly boring. I cannot stand watching it. But the whole thing about this is they're making some kind of big statement about equal pay and how the women are underpaid according to that. Well, I may find soccer boring, but I do like statistics and I do like numbers, especially economic numbers. And it turns out that the Men's World Cup made over $6 billion the last time it was going on. By contrast, the women's made $130 million. Wow. I mean, that's not even in the same planet as how much the Men's World Cup. And I understand outside of America, it's super popular. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. But the point is, it's a certain point you have to say scoreboard. And you would think being athletes, they would understand that. At a certain point, you have to say, if you want to make more money, then you need to be bringing in more money. It would be the same thing as if I walked into my program director, I walked into Joe's office, who, by the way, Sports Radio 740, The Fallout, listen to him. If I walked into Joe's office and said, you know what, Joe, I am really angry that Rush Limbaugh makes so much more than I do. Now, granted, Rush isn't nearly as good as me, but he does have the numbers. Now, I'm playing. Rush is the godfather of radio for a reason. But if I walked in as like, look, Joe, he's on News Radio 1440. I'm on News Radio 1440. He's a talk show host. I'm a talk show host. Why am I making so much less than Rush Limbaugh? Rush Limbaugh's a millionaire. Why is he making so much more than me? Joe would look at me like I was crazy, first of all, and say, because he brings in more money than you. I mean, even if Rush wasn't a national host, even if he was just middays on News Radio 1440, the guy has better ratings than me. That's okay. I mean, the guy's, what, a 30-year veteran of the trade? That's fine. He's carried by hundreds of radio affiliates all over the country. Rush makes more money than me because he generates more money than me. More people want to buy ads on his show than they do on Tactics, and that's fine. Maybe in 30 years I'll be in the position he's in. I don't know. Kind of doubt it. Rush has a lot to live up to. But my point in all of that is, I'm not bitter about that, and I understand that the reason he makes more is because he generates more. That's fine. I'm not in any way, I hold no animosity whatsoever because Rush makes a lot more than I do. In fact, I look at Rush's success and think, wow, that's awesome. Maybe I can aspire to do that one day. I don't want to bring Rush down. I want to lift myself up. I don't complain that there's income inequality between me and him. That's absurd. Just because we're doing the same thing, he's a lot better at it than I am. And so I think that a healthy dose of humble pie here would be appropriate. By the way, you talk about the disparity between the amount of money they make. Turns out if you're looking at it statistically, in other words, a percentage of the share of the money that they're getting, turns out women are actually overpaid in soccer because you're looking at the $6 billion that they made last time. The men got 13%, or the men got 9% of that. The women, 13%. Now, 13% of $130 million is considerably less than 9%. Of $6 billion, but the point is, women are actually making a larger percentage of the money that they're generating than the men are. And the women typically have contracts, whereas the men basically get paid in bonuses. And so their income is not only a higher percentage, but it's actually more stable and more reliable. And so this idea that she's complaining about being underpaid, the numbers actually show the opposite is true if you're looking at it based on how much they generate. They're actually keeping a larger chunk of the money that they make than the men are. But here's the thing, and maybe I've been guilty of this too. Maybe we're focusing just a little too much on where we disagree with one another. Maybe we should focus on the points of agreement, because there is actually a point where I agree with Megan Rapinoe. And so I'll go ahead and play that clip now.
In the moments immediately following the final whistle, you get that USA, USA chant, but equal pay along that same cadence.
Yeah.
I think fans want to know what they can do to support that fight.
Fans can come to games. Obviously, the national team games will be a hot ticket, but we have 9 teams in the NWSL. You can go to your league games. You can support that way. You can, buy players' jerseys. You can lend your support in that way. You can tell your friends about it. You can become season ticket holders. I think in terms of that, that's the easiest way for fans to get involved.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it. Megan Rapinoe on Rachel Maddow's show. By the way, looking like a Democrat presidential candidate, I'm kind of surprised she didn't announce her candidacy last night. I mean, every other person on the left, there's like 900 candidates now, but nonetheless, I couldn't agree more. If people want to support women's soccer, then they should go to soccer games. They should buy the women's soccer merchandise. You want to support it? That's how. Which, by the way, by saying that, well, the reason we don't have equal pay is because people aren't going to our games, that's the point that I just made. Megan Rapinoe just made my point for me. If the reason you have income inequality is because you're not generating nearly as much income, and the remedy to that is people buying more tickets and spending more on jerseys, which, by the way, I'm fine with. I'm a free market guy. It's hilarious to me that her remedy to this is capitalism, which is, like I said, okay. If more people want to watch women's soccer games, they will go to more women's soccer games. That's how the market works. And if her fans are wanting her to make more money, they will spend more money on going to see her games. Now, they haven't done that so far, but here's the thing that I really do want to point out here, and I don't understand why anybody would pay any money to see any soccer game, but that's just me. It does basically undermine her own argument, because she's saying that there's some kind of injustice going on, that we're not paid equally. Well, the person deciding that is the fan. You're in an entertainment industry, just like I am. You, me, Jimmy Kimmel, actors and actresses in movies, we all have different forms of entertainment, but it's all an entertainment industry. And ultimately, the thing that determines how much money we make is how much people want to watch us, how many people want to listen to us. And in her case, how many people want to see her kick a ball around for an hour. That's it. And if people do want to, they do want her to make more money. Now, granted, I don't feel a great deal of sympathy for her. She's a millionaire. But I don't feel a great deal of sympathy for her. But if her fans do, and they want her to make more money, all they have to do is spend more money on soccer games. Now, here's the thing about that. They're saying that this is a thing that women need to do. When's the last time you remember a group of women, say, for a bachelorette party or just for a girls' night out? They're all sitting around and they say, you know what we should do? Go to a women's soccer game. It just doesn't happen. These women are not getting paid less because there's some kind of social injustice. It's that women don't support it. Let's think, where is a medium that women actually do support and women in that industry actually make more money? What about fashion models? Women pay a lot of money to fashion models. They usually do it indirectly, but they buy fashion magazines, and they buy the clothes that models wear because they think, oh, look at, I don't even know any models. I can't even come up with one name. But we'll use just Taylor Swift, just because she's a famous person. They'll see on the cover of a magazine, wow, Taylor Swift looks amazing in that dress. I want to buy that dress so I can look like Taylor Swift, which is fine. But female models are paid way more than male models. Why? Because that's where women spend their money, spend their capital. And they do that and they support an industry that they are interested in. And because of that, in that particular industry that women support, female models make way more than male models. There is an income inequality in the modeling world, which is understandable. Because guys don't buy things based on that typically. When was the last time you saw a man see a really jacked, muscled up guy in an underwear ad and thought, okay, I need to go buy that underwear to look like that guy? We don't think that way. We walk into Walmart, we see a six pack of whatever our brand is, we throw it in, and that's the end of that. Women spend an awful lot of time and effort thinking about these things. Victoria's Secret models are paid a lot of money because they make the product look good and they move more of the product, and women pay an exorbitant amount of money for these things because there are attractive models that show the product off and make that product sell more. And so, really, the big difference in these two industries is that A, sports is an industry primarily frequented by men, and B, the women that do, they're not going to spend nearly as much money on it. Because in the industries where they do that, women are more successful. And so you can couch it as some kind of social inequality, but the truth is women made that decision. Women are the ones that decided, we do want to support this, we don't want to support this, because we like this more than this on average. That's fine. That's the way a free market works. And Rapinoe is exactly right. If her fans do want them to make just as much money as the men do, all they have to do is buy more jerseys and buy more tickets. That's it. That's all you need to know. Now, one thing that is funny, real quick, before we do go, because we are running out of time, she also said that they are going to be not only the best women's soccer team, but the best soccer team. Good luck with that one, sweetheart. In fact, I remember just maybe 2 years ago, they hosted a scrimmage game with only teenage boys. So, I mean, yes, soccer players, but high school and college age soccer players, they played a scrimmage against the women's national team. So the best team in the United States for women, they played a group of teenage boys and they lost 5-2. Wasn't even close. I mean, men are just physically better at this than they are. So they can say all they want to. I guarantee you, as bad as the men's soccer team is, and it is, I heard the last time... in one of the stories I was reading, I heard the last time they didn't even qualify for the World Cup. So they didn't even get to go to the tournament or however they determined that. I have no idea. You can tell I don't think I've ever actually sat and watched a full soccer game when I wasn't at Auburn. Even then, I wasn't really paying attention. But nonetheless, the last time the men went to qualify, they didn't even qualify to go to the World Cup. I guarantee you, you put the U.S. men's soccer team against the U.S. women's soccer team, the U.S. men's soccer team will pound them into the ground. I mean, it'll look like a high school soccer game. The score will be like 10-1 or something crazy like that. In fact, I would love that social experiment to take place. That might be the one soccer game I actually want to watch. But nonetheless, this all stems from the crazy idea that there is absolutely no physical difference between men and women. There are, and that's fine. That's okay. There are certain things that women are better at. There are certain things that men are better at. There are certain sports, and we've gone over this before. There are certain sports that people prefer watching the women. We prefer watching the women in most of the equestrian events. We prefer watching women in things like gymnastics. That's more popular than the male version. Things like figure skating. Women's figure skating is more popular than men's figure skating, and that's fine. Because that's a different skill set, and physicality is not the only measure. You also have grace, flexibility, things that women tend to be better at. And that's okay. The fact that we're different is not something that we ought to shun and ought to act like there is some kind of underlying societal injustice that is taking place just because we admit that men and women are physically different, which is something that anybody with basic common sense can quickly acknowledge. All right, I've already given this story far more attention than it deserves. I'm already going to be late for church, so I need to head on to that. The truth is, nobody should be paying attention to soccer at all right now. It's baseball season. We had the All-Star game last night. Why on earth would you ever even contemplate watching any soccer whatsoever, regardless of whether it's men or women playing. All right, stay the course, friends.
Tactics is a production of News Radio 1440 and Cumulus Media Montgomery. Any opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Cumulus Media. The theme song for Tactics is 6 Foot Town by Big and Rich. Graphics by Jessica Dawson. Broadcast studios provided by Cumulus Media Montgomery. Location studios provided by the Dalreda Church of Christ. Copyright 2019.